From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
While it was true and remains true that Illinois needs massive reform to get back on track, I underestimated how difficult change can be in government. I humbly ask for another 4 years to finish the job we started to save our state.
The governor, of course, is trying to distract from his complete failure over 3.5 years to get anything done for the state of Illinois. So here he is in a desperate move in the last, you know, what are we at, 2 months of the campaign to try to reset and talk about something new. And the fact is that every day I think he's proven that he's a failure, and that speech was actually a conglomeration of admission that he has been an utter and complete failure to the state.
Well, Governor Bruce Rauner and his Democratic opponent, J.B. Pritzker, each speaking out this week. What did we learn from what they each had to say? Pritzker was at the City Club of Chicago this week. Governor Rauner also speaking at a hotel in Chicago. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel this week includes Charlie Wheeler, who's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our State House studio, we have Brian Mackey, State House editor for NPR Illinois. We also have Daisy Contreras, NPR Illinois State House reporter. And joining us by phone from Chicago today, we have Tina Svendelis, who is with the Chicago Sun-Times. Tina, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And you did cover Bruce Rauner. Let's start there. The governor giving what some might have, I think, referred to as an apology for his first 4 years in office and laying out the reasons why he should be reelected. Is that a fair assessment of what took place there?
I'm not sure it was an apology. I think it was more like a reset button where he just wanted to kind of lay out this groundwork because he knows he's behind in the polls, and he wanted to just kind of lay out that I'm humbly asking you for 4 more years. I don't think it's an apology because he didn't really admit any mistakes. He talked about the hardships of the budget impasse. He called it painful, but I didn't see anything of I did this wrong or should have done this wrong. So that's why I don't really think it's an apology.
Why do it now? Any idea why this time was chosen for this type of speech?
That's what we were told about this reset button, that things are not going very well for him. He has an opponent who has an endless amount of cash who can just throw out TV ads whenever he wants. So I think that's the image that he's trying to give, that he's a humble person who wants to keep creating change and that he needs 4 more years to do this.
And Brian, we have not heard that type of comments made by the governor in the last 4 years, really, that humility that some people say was brought forward in this type of speech. What again, you know, is it just a last minute, like a Hail Mary to say, hey, I'm way behind. I've got to at least appeal to my base and tell them, hey, you've got to come out and support me. Things will get better if you do.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the context here, is that he barely won his primary election. He only won it by 3 percentage points against a drastically underfunded challenger from the right. Now he's going up against, and he himself has, you know, for the sake of campaign advertising, virtually unlimited money, tens of millions of dollars he's contributed to himself over the years, and, you know, seems to have a nearly limitless supply of money for his own TV ads. But he has consistently trailed J.B. Pritzker in the polls. And so I think he just wanted to try and do, you know, sort of something, anything to make particularly Republicans take a look at him, but also independents in Illinois, and, you know, keep up that image he has as the political outsider, even though he's now been governor for 4 years. And I think Tina was right when she said it, you know, it has been described as an apology speech, but if you actually read the text and listen to the words, he didn't really apologize. He said, you know, one of his mistakes was he had too much courage, and which kind of reminded me of that thing, you know, you say, what's your flaw when you know, in a job interview, right? And you say, well, I care too much, or I try too hard. And that was basically his answer, is that, you know, the reason we had the budget impasse is because he wanted to do what was right. And he made these nods towards saying, well, now I understand that honest people can disagree about the right policies to have, you know, and the right, you know, we all want to solve the problems of Illinois. But then later in the speech, he went on attacking House Speaker Michael Madigan, attacking Pritzker, and, you know, using that same line he's used again and again about, this is not about Republicans and Democrats, this is about the people. But it is about Republicans and Democrats, and that's why we saw that. I mean, he has very different ideas about what should be done in terms of policies in this state than the Democratic majorities in the legislature. And I don't really know that he laid out how that dynamic would be any different if he's reelected.
And Charlie, your thoughts? Well, you've been critical of the governor throughout much of his administration on many of the things he's said and done. Did you take anything out of this that seems to indicate like we would get a different 4 years of Bruce Rauner if he was reelected?
I didn't really see it that way. I kind of thought it really wasn't an apology. It was more, okay, I'm really underwater in the polls. What can I do to try and buoy myself up? And some of his lines, this fact that this courage, and I'm thinking to myself, well, courage can be different things to different listeners. Some people would think courage is bravery. Some people would think the courage that he apparently believes he showed was more a matter of mulish stubbornness. And when he talked about, he finally realized that you have to work with other people and you have to compromise. I'm thinking to myself, man, you're really a slow learner because there were people telling you that from day one, which you didn't pay any attention to. So I'm not sure if this will do the trick for him or not.
But Charlie,
and a lot of the things he took credit for happened despite him, not because of him. The new school formula, that was literally brought about by overriding one of his vetoes.
But Charlie, he's not the first person to come into office like this who feels they had a mandate, who feels as though the voters were saying enough of Democratic leadership. It's gotten us into some, you know, tough financial situations. We've had other problems with, you know, the Rod Blagojevich scandal and such. To feel as though I've been given a mandate by voters, and you know, and so somewhere along the line, yeah, I guess people can change and people can rethink. So is it fair to give him, you know, to give him the benefit of the doubt on something like that?
From my experience, I would not be inclined to, because I look back at the administrations that I covered and that I've been watching since I came to the university. There's never been one like Bruce Rauner. When I started as a reporter, Dick Ogilvie was the governor. We had 4 years of Dan Walker, who really was someone who could have gotten a lot more accomplished had he been willing to work with the other members of the Democratic Party, namely Mayor Daley. But he spent 4 years fighting with Mayor Daley, and Mayor Daley took him out in the primary in 76. Jim Thompson worked well with the Democratic majorities. Thompson never had a Republican majority in the General Assembly. He worked well with the Democratic leadership. In later years, it was Michael Madigan. Jim Edgar, Republican, worked well with the Democrats. George Ryan. And so the history of Republican governors has been they've been able to get along with the Democrats. They've been able to realize that half a loaf is better than none, not my way or the highway. Now the governor says, oh, I finally figured out you actually have to compromise. There's actually people who have different ideas than you do, and not everybody's going to do what I tell them to.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a very slow learner. If it's taken him 3.5 years to come to that conclusion.
You know, and it's interesting. This kind of reminded me of what he did on primary night going against Jeannie Ives. He didn't take her very seriously throughout that campaign. And in a very close race, he came out saying to his, you know, to the Republican base, I have heard you. I understand that maybe I haven't done enough to listen to what your issues are and what you care for. But that kind of showed him that he needed to listen a little more.
Well, that's a good point, the Republican base. Tina, was that who this speech was really aimed at? Was it aimed at the broad voting public or aimed at that core base that seems to have left Bruce Rauner to some extent?
I think that's definitely on his mind, and it was definitely on his mind as he signed bills towards this entire summer. There's so many bills that he signed. There's a couple of immigration bills that he vetoed that were clearly kind of for that base. But I do think he is trying to get some of the moderates as well, some of the suburban voters. I think he's really thinking that there might be some undecided, some people that might not like J.B. Pritzker's 75 million ads or his message. So I think that he's trying to get these moderates, the suburban voters, and then getting a little bit back of his base.
And Brian, J.B. Pritzker was speaking in Chicago Friday morning. What did we learn from his delivery to the City Club of Chicago? Was there anything that was new out of that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I didn't really hear much new there. That, I mean, it was a speech generally about mental health and sort of the state's approach to mental health. We heard a lot of things we've heard on the campaign trail before. even in the Q&A when other topics came up. Pritzker has a habit, as does Governor Rauner, of not really addressing the question he's asked. He sort of pivots to give the answer he wants to give. So when he was asked about, you know, somebody asked him about a 14-point plan dealing with gang violence, do you support that? I mean, that's a yes or no question. Instead, he started talking about guns and, you know, we need to look at the implements of violence, which I guess is maybe the new consultants' way they're telling Democrats to talk about gun control, is talking about, you know, addressing the implements of violence instead of guns. But it was largely sticking to his talking points. And then in a, you know, in the Q&A afterwards, we heard him going right back after Governor Rauner, calling him a liar and a failure and the things that his campaign, the message that his campaign has been trying to deliver for months now.
Well, can he get through this entire campaign without really giving more specifics than he is right now? I mean, the polls are showing. In fact, there's a new poll out from the Illinois Broadcasters Association showing him with about a 17-point lead over Bruce Rauner right now. And that's similar to some others we've seen. I mean, can he get through this whole thing without getting into the details of what he would actually do as governor?
I think that the debates will tell us a lot, don't you think? The debates will be very specific. Yeah. We're going to try to get him to say this, like, progressive income tax rate, which is what we care about a lot in the state. So I do think that there's going to be a push to try to get way more specifics. I tried to do that myself yesterday. It doesn't really work. He always kind of pins it on the legislature that they will set the rate, but I think it's something that voters want to know.
And Brian, go ahead if you were gonna weigh in on that.
I was just gonna say, I mean, I think if his poll numbers stay up, then no, we won't get more specifics. I mean, remember Governor Rauner's, you know, he did have a few white papers and some policy ideas on this and that, but his basic campaign message was shake up Springfield, bring back Illinois. That's six words. And in the modern campaign environment, especially when you have, as Tina said earlier, a virtually unlimited amount of money to get your message out, you can afford to campaign on puppies and things like that and not really get into specifics, apparently. We'll find out in November.
And Charlie, you wanted to get in on that.
Well, I was going to say, if you're Pritzker, you look at, say, the latest poll, and it shows that only 23.9% of the respondents had an overall favorable view of the governor. 52.4% had an overall unfavorable view. So if you're Pritzker, you figure, why do I have to give any details that, from my perspective, Governor Rauner would seize upon, twist, distort, use against me in attack ads? I'm just going to kind of float along vaguely and let Rauner wallow in the depths and try and figure out how to get to the top. I mean, it doesn't serve the public well because people would really like to know. But in this day and age, with social media and everything, it strikes me that it's a candidate who actually lays out specifics is running the risk of having those taken and being distorted.
And Tina, you mentioned the debates and candidate forums. That's going to be the place where some tougher questions will be thrown to both of these folks, and they're going to have to respond. J.B. Pritzker has gotten some heat for not agreeing to attend the Chicago Tribune editorial board, their endorsement session, as they call it. He's not going to attend that, but apparently he is going to go to the Sun-Times.
Yes. I guess there were some weeks and weeks of negotiations, but we have confirmed that both of them will be attending. I believe it's October 9th. First, it was just going to be, I believe they wanted to appear separately, and we did some convincing, so they will be appearing together.
Brian, does he gain anything? I guess that's what we were trying to talk about this earlier in the week, but does he gain anything by going to the Chicago Tribune? Does anybody care about that but reporters primarily?
Well, that's the question, right? And the answer is probably not nearly as much. I mean, those of us, I still remember and think back and refer to some of the things that Governor Rauner and former Governor Pat Quinn were asked during the 2014 campaign. I think some of the best questioning came at those events because, yes, you can ask difficult questions at debates, but there's a certain formality. It's live television. People are conscious of that. You know, the candidates have two minutes to answer. They can filibuster the answer. Whereas in these endorsement sessions at these editorial board meetings, it's much more of a real give and take. If somebody's not answering, they can get interrupted. And so I still remember Governor Rauner, when he was just a candidate, same-sex marriage was still a big issue in the news in Illinois at the time, and they just kept pressing him and pressing him. This might have been in the primary even, about, you know, what do you feel in your heart about this? And you just don't get those opportunities because, you know, in, like I said, in a debate setting, it's very formal. The candidate can filibuster the answer. In a Q&A, you get their flack going, oh, last question, oh, we got to go to the next event, and you never really get to press them on that. These are a sort of a rare opportunity where they are sort of captive. They're sitting there, they can't get away, and you can just really continue to press them and point out, okay, you're just not going to answer then. I guess we'll just have to leave it where you're not going to answer. It allows a certain contentiousness that the media handlers have kind of ironed out of the rest of campaign coverage and the process.
And Tina, do we know how many times these fellows will be sitting down together or appearing on a stage together? I mean, I know there had been talk of debates. We're in that time of the year. Do we know yet how many times this is going to actually, these will actually take place?
I believe that they've agreed to three, and I believe the first one is actually next week, September 20th. So they'll have the three debates in addition to the Sun-Times editorial board, and I believe that there is a State Journal Register one. So there are some newspapers or media outlets that are getting them both to appear for their editorial boards, but I believe that there's three agreed to debates.
Charlie, I got to go back before we leave this topic, just that it seems to me this is where voters need to step up and demand, you know, that these three debates for a state as large as Illinois is not enough, in my opinion, for an office that's as important as governor. There was a time when you could not win, I think, if you had looked like you were trying to skirt the issues and trying not to, you know, answer the questions. Every candidate's tried to do that, probably going back to the beginning of the country. But at the same time, the voters, I think, used to demand a little bit more access to these folks.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I don't know what the ratings would be on the debate.
Sure. And not everybody will watch, but they will read reports about it.
Oh, yeah, they'll read stories about it, maybe. You wonder sometimes how well-informed people are, though. You see some of the stuff that appears on social media, and you think, man, is this person living in the same state I am? And I know that this changing the subject, years ago when Jim Egger first ran, he ran against Democratic Attorney General Neil Hardigan. And after the first debate, Egger was complaining, Hardigan didn't answer the questions. He'd be asked a question, and his response would be, well, that's a good question. Now, let me tell you about this. And Egger had given, well, you know, Egger is a public policy wonk, so that's how he responded. And he was very miffed, and we tried to explain to him, Governor, he was Secretary of State, Mr. Secretary, that's the way this stuff works at these debates. They're really not the formal debates, they're really not a good way to get out ideas because a candidate comes in, he's got the three things he's going to stress, that's it.
Well, let's move on to some news coming out this week regarding public colleges and universities. The fall enrollment numbers, really over the last couple of weeks, these have been flowing in. And U of I announcing, I think overall, the flagship campus saw 3% or so increase in students this year. Some other campuses were down. Daisy, you were following the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, our campus here at UIS, overall, the enrollment dropped about 7% from a year ago. Freshman class numbers are up, though. And overall, there's this concern over stricter immigration laws that are making it difficult for international students to want to be students here. The largest drops came from Western Illinois University and Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. A lot of the blame is placed on the budget impasse that really hurt these schools and a lot of layoffs. And there's also the struggle of keeping students interested to stay in Illinois. I think Illinois is the number two exporter of students right behind New Jersey. A lot of people come in here trying to get those students to go out of state. So, yeah, I mean, the future of public universities, not sure, but at least for UIS and for Eastern Illinois University. Eastern Illinois University over the last few years had some struggles trying to keep their numbers up, and actually they had, I think, the largest increase in students.
In their freshman class, yeah.
In their freshman class, and they said that they have been trying different approaches to getting students in.
And really it starts at home, it seems like, Charlie, as far as convincing more kids that are already in Illinois to stay in Illinois and go to school.
Well, they see the difficulties that were encountered at the time of the budget impasse, and they realized like if you're in southern Illinois, Cape Girardeau, southeast Missouri, gives you a better deal. They give you in-state tuition. They give you more perks than if you live in Carbondale and want to go to Southern Illinois University. And that's what we have to deal with. And one of the things I do in recruiting is I go around to different schools around the state and I talk to the folks there. And I've had faculty tell me that they've had parents say, "We really like your program, but if my daughter goes here, will you still be here in 4 years?" That kind of thing. And if a student can get a better deal out of state, somewhere that appears to be more stable, where there's not these ongoing challenges, you know, the family's going to take advantage of that. And then the student gets acclimated somewhere else, maybe gets a job offer in the area, and stays. And that's someone with great potential that we've lost.
Let me move back to politics. Tina, you covered Speaker Madigan being deposed in a court case. For a lot of folks, may not know what this is all about. Fill us in on that, and what was the whole reason he was brought in?
Sure. So the plaintiff is Jason Gonzalez. He ran against Madigan in the 2016 primary, and he believes that the speaker put up two fake candidates with Hispanic names to kind of confuse voters. So he's launched a federal lawsuit. It was thrown out once, brought back. It's been a very lengthy process, but it's kind of finally getting into the home stretch. The speaker's deposition is among the last ones, and that was yesterday. It was about 5 hours, and the plaintiff, Jason Gonzalez, was able to sit in on it. His attorney is former Cook County Commissioner Tony Pariaca. So that's a very interesting mix of people. It was about 5 hours. They got to ask him very pointed questions about whether he puts up these sham candidates in legislative races. They asked him about Larry Dominick. They asked him about the governor. So it seemed to be a very lengthy deposition.
And we're getting into some real, insider type of politics with something like this. Is it illegal for campaign for somebody to basically do that, to try to get somebody else to run and split votes, things of that sort on the ballot?
That's what they're trying to determine. They're trying to determine whether it violates any election laws. And I don't know if they're going to have enough evidence to do that, but I think the goal is to try to get to the bottom of how the speaker runs legislative races and whether this is something that he does.
Brian, also want to talk about a state representative making some news for the wrong reasons this week, another harassment complaint. This is against a state representative, a Republican, Jerry Long. Fill us in on that.
This word came to the House Republican organization that there was an investigation, or that there were some complaints about Representative Long. They say they brought in a third party and to investigate. And when they finally got their report, they made a decision to withdraw their support of Representative Long's campaign and, to restrict his access to things that most legislators get access to, staff help, use of social media, things like that. And they also urged him to step down. So there is still time, apparently, according to the State Board of Elections, for them to try to put up another candidate in that race. But this is a race that the House Democrats have had their eye on and are, looking to hope to be able to flip and increase the size of their majorities.
I mentioned harassment complaint. Do we know details about what is being alleged here?
I have not seen those details yet. I don't know if somebody else might have better information than I do, but I don't think we have gotten anything like that.
Okay. Charlie, you wanted to say something?
Well, I was going to say that's a district. Representative Long is a freshman. He got elected 2 years ago in a district that over the years has elected Democrats. It's kind of stretched along the Illinois River Valley. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Representative Long is from Streeter. One of the people who held that seat in the past is our current Auditor General, Frank Maltino. His dad had it before him, both Democrats. So this was a number one target anyway. And the fact that now this questions are being raised about Representative Long's behavior, that is really makes it a tough seat to defend. And the last that I saw, and you guys can correct me if you have updates, Representative Long denied that he's done anything wrong. He just said, "I'm a very demanding boss." And he didn't appear inclined to step down as the House Minority Leader Jim Durkin would like him to do.
And this,
yeah, and I can add to what Charlie said. Just the News Tribune, a little quick web search. He did give a statement to the News Tribune newspaper and said, quote, because of the nature of this high pace, high pressure nature of this campaign, I can be demanding. This is not a sexual harassment of any kind, but merely a difference of opinion on the lack of support by the Republican Party that goes back several months. And he says he has no intention of pulling out of the race, and this just shows that he's not part of the good old boys club.
Okay, let's move on to our notes from the field. Daisy, let's start with you.
Yeah, so state and city officials announced its plan to reform the Chicago Police Department earlier this week. It's a consent decree. It was drafted by the Illinois Attorney General's Office in the city of Chicago, as well as the Chicago Police Department. The new agreement would require police officers to report when they point their guns at someone and have a supervisor review the incident.
Charlie?
Well, there was legislation introduced this past week that on the surface sounds really good. And it basically, it's sponsored by Representative Mark Batnick, who's a Republican from Plainfield. He's got five co-sponsors. I believe most of them, or if not all of them, are suburban Republicans. And his argument is that if the legislature doesn't pass a budget, they should not get any pay. And so his bill specifically would strike out a line in the State Budget Act that says, in essence, legislative appropriations cannot be reduced, so the salaries would have to be in there. The difficulty is with his plan, even if it were to pass, chances are it would be thrown out in court. You may recall that Pat Quinn attempted to hold up legislative pay, demanding that there be a pension bill passed, and it went to court, and the circuit judge in Cook County said, no, you can't do that because the Constitution says flat out you can't raise or diminish legislative pay during their term. So it's maybe good for PR purposes. As a matter of fact, some Democratic candidates are saying the same thing now, but I don't think in the long run it would stand up to a court challenge.
Okay. Tina?
Yeah, not really news, but a reporter's observation that yesterday during the Bruce Rauner speech at the Hilton, I was just receiving a lot of calls from both Republicans and Democrats asking me if I would actually show up, because I'm a union member, and they are striking at that hotel that's one of about 27 hotels that are on strike in Chicago. So I just thought that was an interesting observation of whether you do report on stories as a union member, which I did do, but there were several TV camera people who did not come in.
And Brian.
Yeah, sad or unfortunate news out of Peoria this week. The company that owns the Peoria Journal-Star newspaper decided to lay off several reporters there. One of them was Chris Kergard, who's a friend of mine. He is a friend of the show. He's been on the show before. He was a classmate of mine in Charlie's public affairs reporting program many years ago. So unfortunate. He covered politics for them. That's a real loss to the readers of Peoria and the rest of us who follow politics around Illinois. And another unfortunate decision by some of the big private equity firms that have bought up a lot of American newspapers and continue squeezing them and their readers for profits.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there for this week. Thanks to the members for our broadcast today, Charlie Wheeler, Daisy Contreras, Brian Mackey, and from the Chicago Sun-Times, Tina Svandelis. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and find us at NPR One. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.